Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Speaking of Translation. I'm Eve Bode.
And I'm Corinne McKay. Thanks for joining us.
In this episode, we're going to be wrapping up the year 2020. And we want to say, as I'm sure many of you do, good riddance. And in a positive way, we want to look ahead to 2021 and some of our goals, as well as suggesting some ways in which our listeners can take stock of the year as well.
So to kick things off, as usual, we'll give a short update on what's been going on with each of us. So I am one day away from finishing my first semester in my master's in conference interpreting program. We're recording this on December 10th, 2020. And as long as I am still alive at 4 p.m.
Don't say that!
As long as I make it until 4 p.m. Colorado time tomorrow, I'm officially half done with the program.
So
actually,
wonderful.
Yeah, a little less, because then after the second semester, we have a period of intense preparation for our final exams. But I love the program. I'll talk more about it later. I'm not in a hurry to get it over with. I also got a new high quality agency client, something that has sort of been a goal of mine for a while.
Good,
great. Yeah, so I'm glad I was sort of patient with that and found a great agency client that's doing big international development projects that I'm very excited about. And things over at my online course platform, Training for Translators, are booming with lots of online courses, including one that Eve just wrapped up, the Second Language Challenge.
Awesome.
So overall, in that realm, things are good. So Eve, how about you?
Yeah, thanks. And before I move on, I do want to say, I just love hearing about the Master's in Conference program and I'm cheering you on, and it just sounds really fun and like a positive thing. So thanks for telling us about that.
Thanks.
So I've been working on a bunch of fun projects lately. And I actually think it's funny because different times over the years, I've explained to like friends who aren't in translation, like, I worked on this really fun project, you know, like my sister, and she was like, that sounds gross. You know, or like, I mean, you have to be the translator mindset, I guess.
Your eyes are glazed over.
Yeah. Yeah. Or a friend of mine that also speaks French, but isn't a translator. And she's like, okay. Yeah. Anyway. So for me, I had some really fun projects lately in the international development sector too. And also in sustainability, which was really fun. And then as we talked about before, and I'm going to talk about a little bit later too, I've had a lot of fun still with the Global Reads for Translators book club. Yay. So we're in the middle of discussing our sixth book for the year, and we're voting on the seventh. I just think the voting seems like something small, but it's just like really fun. I think everybody really likes it. And I do too. I go in there like every night and I'm like, okay, you know, the horse race,
the leader
books.
Now.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's really fun. So, and people are really wonderful about suggesting different wonderful books to throw out there. So, and also I think I mentioned it last time that I was going to present for CICATA, the Chicago Area Translators and Interpreters Association, on maintaining your second language. And I did do that and it was super fun. And they were a wonderful crowd and made me feel very valued. So that was fun. And then also, I think since our last podcast here, I was a guest on the Smart Habits for Translators podcast. And I talked about that same topic and lots of other topics, maintaining your second language and lots of other things related to translation and bilingualism and things like that. And that was really fun.
Great. So our first question that I'm going to ask you, Eve, what would you say are some of your highlight accomplishments for 2020? And if you have any insights on what contributed to those achievements, I think our listeners would enjoy that.
Okay. Yeah. So before Corinne and I started recording, she knows anyway, but that, you know, for me and for many other people, you know, this has been a super hard year. And I think all of us have, even outside the pandemic, like we were talking about, you know, that normally life has different stressors, but it's even harder to deal with now because we're in the middle of the pandemic. So me personally, I just had some extended family stuff that needed attention. And that took a lot of my time and my energy and my whatever you call it,
emotional
soul.
Bandwidth.
Yeah. Coming out of it. So, but, you know, so that was hard. And I'm sure everybody has something, not exactly like mine, but everybody has some other stressor, right, that made the year even worse, probably. And so, but despite that, I do feel that I have made some strides. And I think kind of fighting against the tide of the pandemic, I feel like, you know, I feel proud having done that in this year that really lasted almost the whole year, right? Because it started in the spring. Mm-hmm. And it hasn't just been like, mm-hmm. oh, it's been 2 months now. It's been like all year. And right. so I feel proud, whatever I accomplished in fighting against this most horrible year on record for any of us alive anyway. So, yeah. Anyway, so from a personal perspective, I wanted to talk about my firstborn, graduated from high school, my son, Luca, and specifically related to this podcast and the topics we talk about here, he earned the seal of biliteracy in French and English. And what that is that many states in the U.S., this is newish program, I don't think, maybe been around 5 years or something, maybe longer, but not, it's pretty new as education in the U.S. goes. Mm-hmm. And many states in the U.S. allow their high schools to award students who have awarded to students who've attained proven proficiency in two or more languages. And so it was just, as many of you've heard over the years talking on the podcast, considering my own family's focus on bilingualism and just the efforts that my husband and I put into our boys being linguistically and culturally bilingual over the years, that was this huge thing for me. And I know it was my son felt like it was a big accomplishment for his, a recognition of his kind of bicultural French American self. And mm-hmm. so also that involved the seal of biliteracy and the graduation, especially during the pandemic, involved a lot of happy, sad crying on my part. So very, very much crying. Yeah. And then from a professional perspective, I had found a couple new clients who ended up being important for me and helped me to get through the pandemic. From a financial standpoint, and one of them in particular is super wonderful to work with, and that was just something so positive to me in this mm-hmm. year. And sometimes, you know, when all of us too, we might complain about like, oh, this agency did that or this. They're just super wonderful. And my main contact is just a wonderful person and super great to work with. So that was something positive and made me feel good, you know, in these dark global times. And then something else that Karen alluded to was it was really fun for me professionally to lead two challenge groups this past year, one in the spring and one in the fall, for Corinne's company, Training for Translators. And I focused on helping people maintain their second language skills. And I like it because it makes me feel good to help other people with ideas. And it also is inspiring to me personally to just see people making progress, and they teach me new ideas too. that's fun. Yeah. And then something that's more directly related to my own business was that Karen's gonna laugh, I think. Another thing that I felt I really made progress on was me being better about my social media planning. So the thing is, as compared to like, you know, different of my friends like Corinne or Madalena, you guys are so, it seems from the outside anyway, you know, that you're so consistent and you're so organized.
Keyword
about planning.
Seems. Yeah, yeah. but go on.
Social media posts. And I just kind of randomly, like, I'm like, oh, I have this I'll have this thought. Like, I'll just do it, you know, when I feel like it or whatever. And I do feel that it is important to be a little more organized about that overall, you know, for your business. And so I feel like I've been I've been better about like planning out some things on my blog, keeping up with posting news about my company, stuff like that. And then I've also been more consistent about sharing that information on my main social media platforms, which are Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook for my business. I mean, and then I also want to say that this does not mean anything earth shattering. And I don't even know if anybody's really noticed. But for me, I felt like, you know, I feel like, okay, you know, the butterfly wing ripple or whatever, it makes a difference to me.
Right.
And oh, I definitely. Also feel like, mm-hmm. instead of thinking like, oh, this would be a cool idea to write something on, you know, then I actually sometimes I do it. Like I have this idea I wanted to write about for years about managing time zone differences, and I just published that today or whatever, you know, that there's an outlet for some creative thoughts that come up that's related to mm-hmm. business information I want to share. So. For me personally, I think that's been a big win, and I feel like, yes, I'm on the right path going into 2021 mm-hmm. for that. Yeah. And then another thing is, I, like I said, we talked about that before, but I've been really super pleased with the Global Reads for Translators book club. I started it in January 2020, so 2020, just, you know, a year ago, and now there's over 300 members, and it continues to grow, and it's just been a really positive thing where people seem to feel really like it, and if they are involved, you know, mm-hmm. and they can be involved however they want, and people give me good feedback, and it's just a fun, positive translator kind of thing to do. So mm-hmm. I've really enjoyed that. And then to finish up with this section for me, On the volunteer side, I felt really good about what I've accomplished as a board member for the American Translator Association. And in my role as public relations chair, I've set and accomplished quite a few goals in my role as the PR chair. And so I just feel like in my, you know, the ATA has so many wonderful volunteers and it takes so many people to kind of, you know, move forward. But I feel like in my one little corner of that universe, I am positively contributing to this larger organization. And so that makes me happy. So, yeah. So Corinne, give us your scoop on that.
Yeah. So I would say, you know, the main thing for me this year was doing this conference interpreting master's program, which has been sort of a crazy dream that I've had for a while. And it's like, I tell everyone, the only question I can't answer is what I'm going to do with it. Like, I can tell you why I wanted to do it. I can tell you what I like about it, but just don't ask what I'm planning on doing with
it. I'm sure it'll be big things.
Well, and I actually think for me, in a way, I'm such a like practical, goal-oriented person that it sounds weird, but in and of itself, it was an accomplishment.
Yes.
To say, I'm going to jump on this opportunity just because I want to do it.
Yes, you know, yes. Just, there's total value in doing that. And I'm sure wonderful things will come of it anyway, but I think that's enough in and of itself.
Yeah, but for me, that actually felt like sort of a, you know, emotional accomplishment, if mm-hmm. you want to put it that way. Like, why am I doing it? Because the opportunity arose and I wanted to. Mm-hmm. So I think there, the takeaway I'd say for our listeners is sort of staying open to opportunities and being willing and able to really jump on them. Like the first time I heard that the York University Glendon College program was going to be entirely online this year was about August 5th. And I started classes on September 10th. That's how fast it happened.
Wow.
And then I think also being financially conservative so that I have cash reserves for that kind of thing, that sometimes mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, my husband and I live a little bit too financially conservatively. You know, even my accountant tells me, like, have a little fun.
Yeah,
right? Exactly. but I think that was sort of a validation because I was able to, you know, pay the tuition for the program and cut back on work at least a bit to give myself some time. And then another category for me, I think, is ramping up the Training for Translators offerings with more courses taught by outside instructors. Mm-hmm. So I made that transition pretty slowly. Like, I started teaching, getting started as a freelance translator in 2006.
Oh my God. I mean, I just mean that it's gone by so fast.
Yeah. So if you feel like it's taking you a while to get things done in your business, I mean, it wasn't that I ever had the aspiration of running a, you know, translation course online platform, but it was 12 years between when I started teaching, getting started as a freelance mm-hmm. translator, and the first time I offered a course taught by someone else.
Mm, okay.
But I think it also shows.
So really pretty recently though, because it's been 14 years total. Okay. Mm-hmm,
2018.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you have so many, there's so many wonderful offerings with so many interesting people with interesting backgrounds. And
yeah, it's really fun and I love doing it. And I think it shows that if you have a sort of non-translation side of your business, that you can just do it slowly in ways that kind of test a like minimum viable product, and only if you're going to use external people, only using people who you really, really rely on. Like mm-hmm. basically almost all of my instructors are people I know personally or have mm-hmm. worked with. And that I feel like it's not only is it not a limitation, but that's a real asset that I feel mm-hmm. like, you know, my main goal is people go away from the classes saying like, wow, this is one of the best things I've ever taken, you know? Mm-hmm. And then I worked on a number of large and interesting international development translations this year and really enjoyed that. And when I'm done with my master's program and have time to look for interpreting clients, that's an area I'd like to target specifically.
Oh, nice.
To do interpreting in that sector. Mm-hmm. And I think I just feel very grateful that my overall income has really not been affected much, if at all, by the pandemic. Even with going back to school pretty much full time and the loss of the majority of my court interpreting income, which I'll talk about later, mm-hmm. my income's going to be pretty much a repeat of 2019, which I'm mm-hmm. very happy with. And I think the sort of takeaway there is, it's a factor of having a pretty diverse business, but not so diverse that I feel all over the place.
All over the map. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So for me in the pandemic, and I've said this before, so I won't go into the details, like translation work has been really stable. Interpreting work dropped to almost nothing. Mm-hmm. And online courses are, you know, going crazy, like good. Selling out almost as fast as uh-huh. I can get them listed. So I think that that's why my income for this year is going to be pretty much exactly what it was in 2019.
Yeah, so the diversification at this point that really helped. And I can refer people back to an earlier episode that we did with Madalena that talks about diversifying your business and giving.
Oh, correct. Business. Yes.
We can link to, I mean, you can find that on the website, but we can link to that too in the notes or whatever. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, Eve, for the flip side, because I think we'd be remiss in, you know, a year such as 2020 if we didn't talk about the flip side. It was not all rainbows and unicorns. What were some disappointments or things you wanted to achieve this year but didn't, or aspects of your business that were affected by the pandemic, or anything else you'd like to share with us on that note?
Yeah. So do you guys have like 2 days? No, I'm just
kidding. I know. No. For me, seriously, I was like, how long do you have and what's your tolerance for listening to me cry? Because I actually, you know, the other day, this is awful. I was thinking through, you know, you have the helpless feeling of listening to someone cry over the phone, which I think all of us are familiar with mm-hmm. when you just want to hug them or do something for them and you can't. But I think the uniquely pandemic phenomenon of watching someone cry on video,
oh, God.
That I was thinking of all of the platforms and situations in which I have watched someone cry over video, kind of, that's 2020 in a nutshell.
Yeah.
So, okay. So over to you, Eve. Yeah,
in that context, but in that context, I've winnered it down for you guys because you don't want me to spill my guts to you like you're a therapist, all you people out there. So I guess one of the things that I have talked about in the past, I think, and if not, this is new then, is that I'm trying to focus on publishing a second edition of my book, which is Maintaining Your Second Language. And I, you know, even though this has been the year of the pandemic and we felt like we've literally been stuck at home for months, mm-hmm. and I think like, oh, I should be done by now. I haven't made as much progress on that as I wanted. And I'm really trying to focus on that right now, like carve out time for that and stuff. But I just feel like, geez, I went through this whole year and, you know, why didn't I get it done? Whatever, I didn't. So, I was hoping to get it done by the end of the year, but that didn't happen. So, and then secondly, another thing is, and what do you call that? Not NIMBY, but the where it's like I see everybody else doing this thing and I'm like, what's wrong? How come I can't do it? And this is related to training. I felt like everybody is like, I've been doing all this training, and I've done some too, like I normally.
Oh, as a participant, you mean?
Yeah, as a participant. Yeah, like I think about, and I've done some, but I just think like everybody else, you know, maybe that's a fallacy or something, but I feel like everyone else is doing all, like you're saying, Corinne, too, that, you know, people have been signing up for it, or people talk about it online, and I'm like, how come I'm not doing that? How come I haven't a time? Or what's wrong with me? How come I'm going on that?
Right.
So I have felt like I kind of missed out on that somewhat. And so what did I have to say about that? Yeah, just like it seemed like everyone else was going training crazy. And I'm like, what am I doing that's kind of missing out on that? So I don't know. So like I said, I'm going to stop there because you guys don't have 10 hours to listen to. But I felt like those were kind of related to what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. So tell us what you think, Corinne.
Yeah. So for me, I think my disappointments this year were, so I passed the Colorado court interpreter exam in June or July of 2019. Mm-hmm. So just as I was getting really excited about court interpreting and my work was really starting to ramp up, it then dropped to literally almost nothing. Mm-hmm. So the Colorado court system was, before the pandemic, my primary / only interpreting client. And really, I think much like many state courts, anything longer than short status hearings is just bumped down the road. You know, I think how that backlog is going to get resolved, I don't know.
And society as a whole.
Right. I mean, I think, yeah, that's kind of a societal question is, you know, like here, I saw a thing in the Denver Post the other day that there have been 9 jury trials completed in Colorado in the last 9 months in the entire state.
Yeah.
So I can tell you from the interpreter standpoint, and Colorado is not unique in this manner, anything longer than a short status conference is pretty much just being pushed. They call it continued, you know, pushed down the road.
And I can attest that's happening in other states. I won't tell you details, but I know that's happening in other states too. Yeah,
being continued.
Yeah.
We're starting to see some longer hearings done over WebEx. Like I've done a couple of multi-hour hearings over WebEx, but mostly not. And so for those short hearings, as an interpreter, you get paid for a 1 hour minimum with no mileage and no travel time, of course, because you're not going anywhere.
Right, right.
So part of what that taught me, and this was like a business concept I hadn't really thought through, is some of what matters in a specific component of your business is how much you earn from it total. Mm-hmm. So in a way you think, why has this affected me a lot when I'm earning the same hourly rate? Like by contract, as a certified interpreter in a language other than Spanish, I get paid $55 an hour for everything I do in the courts. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. Pre-COVID, a typical court interpreting assignment, I earned $150 to $200 total because we would get a 2 hour minimum plus mileage plus travel time. And they almost always schedule the interpreting cases at 8:30 in the morning, the first court slot. So in many cases, I'd be back at my office doing other work by, let's say, 9:30 or 10 a.m., but doing like 5 to 8 of those $150 to $200 appointments a week. So I think in an average month, let's say in, you know, December, January, February last year, I was making maybe $700 to $1,000 a month in court interpreting.
I have a quick question about that for you, Corinne, because I know people listen to us from all over the world, but in this area, like Corinne's in Boulder and Denver is a big metro area that's near us, but it's like, you know, I don't know how far is it, 25 miles from you or something.
25 miles, yeah.
So I always assumed that you were doing most of that in Denver, but then you wouldn't be back by 9:30. So now I'm curious, you know, that you're saying it was pretty quick for you and it was in the Boulder courts?
No. So I do a lot. Some in Denver, some in Centennial, which is south of Denver. So I interpret a lot in Greeley for whatever reason.
Oh,
so
interesting.
Greeley,
and that's north of us for everybody.
Yeah, so Greeley's a sort of agricultural industrial town that's north of Boulder, and there's a large Francophone African community there. So I interpret a lot in Greeley.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the thing is that, you know, you compare that $700 to $1,000 a month, whereas, for example, in November, I did 2 minimum charge interpreting appointments for court. So I made $110 total.
So looking, just thinking about what you said, that you would have made you could have easily made $400 doing that in the past instead of $110, right?
Yeah. And there were way more appointments. I've gone from, you know, probably 5 to 8 a month to like 1 to 2 a month.
Okay.
So the sad part is I love court interpreting. I love the work, but from a financial point of view, it would really, and it sort of depresses me to say this, but it's just true. It would no longer matter to me financially if I just stopped doing it completely. Like the loss of $110 a month in income.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So I'm going to stick with it because the pandemic is not going to last forever, but that was
this huge backlog.
Yes. Right. Yeah. But that was a pretty big hit. And the major effect of the pandemic. And then another loss was my beloved co-working office. Those of you who have listened to our podcast for a while know that I worked at a co-working office for about 6 years that I loved. They shut down in April. Briefly tried to reopen over the summer when it looked like the pandemic situation was going to get better, but it didn't. And finally in August, I just decided to rent a one-person office, which I was able to get for the same price as I was paying at the co-working office because no one really wants to rent offices anymore.
Everyone's pushing the price down.
So I love not working from home. Even being by myself, I love not working from home. But my office does lack other people. But actually, it's kind of good for right now because my interpreting classes are loud. Like, I actually don't know that I could have done interpreting classes from the co-working office because you can't really sit at your desk right next to another person and be like, you know, interpreting for hours on end. And I've also, I was able to rent a pretty big office that I sublet from a psychotherapist. So it's a nice office. And I use the one side of the office to like do yoga and meditate and things. I mean, actually in Boulder, you could do yoga or meditate in a co-working office.
Nobody care. Yeah.
No one would care. But
I used to live with this guy years ago in North Boulder, and he would do Tai Chi in the middle of the living room, and we're all
yeah,
like,
right.
Whatever.
I know.
Yeah. Anyway. So yeah.
Speaking of yoga, and, oh, sorry. Go ahead.
So yeah, no, I was just thinking of, you mentioned yoga and meditating. And as you know, one of my mottos in the pandemic has been stay safe and stay sane, which is really key. And so I thought maybe we could talk to our listeners about how we've made it through this very atypical year in terms of physical and emotional health and coping skills in general too. So I am going to start that off.
Yeah, go for it.
So for me, once we got over the first hump of the shock of being confined in the spring, you know, like the pandemic itself hasn't really gotten any better, but we've all, I don't know if we've gotten better in dealing with this, what I mean, but it's
adaptive.
Like, at least, yeah, like here we didn't, I didn't go like literally anywhere except the grocery store for 3 months, you know? And so I think, and you know, and like we said, around the world, and certainly not in the US, it hasn't gotten better, but somehow we have to function. And so, and I wanted to say too, for me, like in the states I'm most interested in, which are Alaska, which is my home state, has super high COVID rates. And in Colorado, where I've lived for 25 years, more than 25 years, it's, you know, it's worse than it was. It's not one of the, by any means, one of the worst states in the nation, but it's not good. So anyway, like we said, we've learned how to better adjust. So, you know, people are still hiring for, I mean, not that we're looking for jobs, but, you know, if you look around, there's some movement in the economy, people are hiring, you know, people now are starting to give out projects, like everybody else has to adjust too, and they're trying to do what they can to stay normal. So my point is that in the first weeks or months of the pandemic, I felt weird, like marketing my services.
I think that's true. Yep.
Yeah. And now that we've learned, like, the pandemic's not going to end tomorrow. So we have to learn how to live with it. And I've seen others, like I said, in the business world doing this too, clients and colleagues, you know, I'm trying to conduct my business and my marketing sort of normal. You know what I mean? Like not every day, but like, oh my God, will they think I'm a weirdo or whatever for doing this? Or I'm just trying to get myself in a normal mindset and just think, okay, got to move forward. And everybody else is doing that too, to some degree. And so I don't know, this idea kind of came from a conversation I had with my son the other day, that just something he said kind of made me think about it. This perspective is that I don't want the pandemic to define me more than it already does. Like some question he asked me, I was like, yeah, but, because he was like, we can't do this, we can't do that, we can't do this. And I'm like, yeah, but what can you? I was trying to say to him, what can you do?
Right.
Like, I don't want to, of course it's defining us because it's confining a lot of things we can do. But so not in a weird way, I'm not like a climate denier. I'm not a,
COVID denier.
COVID denier, but the idea that, and it, just for my mental state, I'm trying to, in some way, in this one compartment of my brain, I'm trying to ignore it so that I'm not overrun by it, you know, so whatever. So I was saying, so if you're into affirmations, you could say that I tell the pandemic, you're not the boss of me, you know.
Oh my God, I love that. Yeah, right.
So yeah, like I said, by ignoring it, I don't mean that I don't follow social distancing. I do. I'm like super anal about that kind of stuff. And
no, you're extremely scrupulous.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, from a mental perspective, I try to get outside the pandemic. So that's one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then what was anything else? Oh yeah. And from a personal perspective, I know we're all kind of sick of Zoom. I mean, I like Zoom as a product. Zoom, if you're listening, I like you. But you know, I mean, like the Zoom fatigue or whatever, but I'm trying to, just on a personal level, like I have a scheduled time with my family, my extended family, like my mom and my siblings and my nieces and nephews, stuff like that, on Zoom every week. And we do that every week without fail so far. So it's been really great. And then I've been scheduling Zoom get-togethers with my friends periodically. So just yesterday I was telling Corinne, I had a good cathartic gab fest with a friend of mine that's 25, you know, my friend in Colorado for 25 years, who we usually do really fun stuff with. Like every month we'll go plan something downtown, and we're like both crying because we can't do that, but we went, we like to blab. And so we just blabbed for like hours yesterday, and that was great.
Right.
So I think also, getting out of the house, and my house, you know, I mean, like we talked about before, and I know other people think about that too, really making your space something that you're comfortable in, but I don't want to always be in my space. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. I've made myself go outside, and every day, I mean, that sounds dumb, but for every day I walk 2 to 3 miles a day every day. And mm-hmm. so, and I know other people do other kind of, I'm not a crazy athlete like my husband or something, Corinne's husband.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I wish I could tell you, and I run a marathon every day, or I, right. whatever, but I make myself go out every day. Cause it is, mm-hmm. we can get kind of sucked into saying, you know, oh, well, whatever, we have to be here anyway, and staying inside, at least I can. So that's an effort that I make, and it's helped me a lot mentally, I think. And so, the other thing is I also try to use the time walking to spend quality time with my family members. I don't usually, I do go alone sometimes, but I try to get them to go with me. And mm-hmm. they usually, someone does, like one of my teenage sons or my husband. And that, makes me feel like we have some valuable, like one-on-one time or whatever. So another thing that's related to that is I joined an exercise accountability group online.
Oh, cool. I didn't know that.
And yeah, and I'm not super active in it because it costs $39, whoopee-doo. You know, I thought if it makes me do it, $39. And they always say, like, you can participate as much or as little as you want, because they're like, whether you do it or not, you still owe me the $39, right?
Right.
But just for me knowing I paid $39, I'm like, I gotta use my little app and I gotta log it on there. So,
right.
But if, you know, you can, anyway, so people, anyone can do that. And there's a lot of free ones out there too. So, another thing is I call my mother every day. My mother is in her 80s, and it kind of stresses me out, like with all the COVID stuff and just because she's older and all the stuff, you know, but so that's something that makes me feel really more relaxed, or, you know, just with the situation mm-hmm. in general. To hear her voice, okay, oh, she's still doing
right.
fine.
She's fine.
She
right. Yeah. Yeah.
And then, and sometimes we speak for just a few minutes, and sometimes we speak for, you know, an hour or whatever, but that helps me. And then I know that Corinne and many of you out there are big yoga practitioners. And I did it years ago when I was pregnant. And then my husband's like super flexible and I'm not. And I remember her laughing. She realized at the end of the class, I was pregnant at the time. And she was like, mm-hmm. you guys are married. Because I'm sure she thought, what's this flexible guy? You know, as a yoga person, what's this flexible guy doing with this lady? But so since the pandemic, I actually have been doing yoga. And trust me, I'm still super beginner, and I'd be embarrassed to do it in front of any of you people. But
hey, but the goal is perfection.
Yes. Yeah. But the goal is that it helps me. And I do feel like I'm transported to a stress-free zone, you know, for the time that I'm doing it. So, another thing. So I think the importance of that for everybody is, you know, find some kind of exercise or some kind of movement, whatever you can, some kind of movement, however you define that, that helps you to do, you know, to deal with what's going on. And then another thing, some of you guys might have seen, I've been posting in different translator forums too about my obsession with making bread. My husband is French. He really wants his bread. And I find it's really therapeutic for me. So I make that no knead bread, but it's really good. And I have worked on the pet technique. It's for high altitude, because for those of you who don't know, Denver is considered the mile high city, and we're over a mile high. And then I often go to Leadville, Colorado too, which is 2 miles high. Mm-hmm. And so for cooking and stuff. Anyway, so that's been a really fun thing. And then the last thing I wanted to say was, I've really tried to focus on my family, because I kind of mentioned that. Like I think you can get sucked into the idea that I'm with them all the time. I see them all the time. I talk to them all the time. I'm with them 24 hours a day. But that sort of can almost be ships passing in the night, you know?
Yep, totally.
like, yeah. And so I've tried to make a conscious effort, like, okay, today I'm going to ask my one son to do this with me. Or today we're going to do this together as a family, you know, like specific stuff. Just because we're in the same physical location with each other doesn't really mean we're interacting necessarily in quality way. So I try to really keep that in mind. And that's helped me to, you know, keep connections strong with my family members, my immediate family mm-hmm. members, with whom I live. And then also not just kind of getting a mental thing where we're just kind of breaking down in our own little silos. So
right.
So yeah, Corinne, tell us about what you have done to stay safe and sane during this year.
Yeah, so I guess most importantly, we have stayed safe. No one in my family has had COVID, including my parents, who are in their late 70s, who live near us, and we're very fortunate for that. But I think I would add, I have not always stayed sane. joking, but not joking. I consider in non-pandemic times that I am quite an optimistic and like emotionally regulated person. I'm not an emotionally volatile person really at all. And just to validate for anyone out there who feels similarly, there have definitely been times this year when I found it very hard to cope. And I feel like I spend a lot more of my time managing my mm-hmm. emotional health than I normally would. So if you too are struggling, know that it's not just you.
That's for sure, yeah.
I think that for me, the stress has been not so much in the moment, because fortunately, like, my work has been stable. You know, my husband's job has been stable. You know, everyone in my family, including my 70-year-old parents and my 18-year-old daughter, are quite cautious about COVID. We live in a very beautiful place where fortunately we have never been restricted from exercising outside, which is a big stress mm-hmm. coping tool for me. So I've been able to continue hiking and running and riding my bike, and over the summer, even outdoor in-person yoga classes. So I realized, like, that's a huge blessing and one I try not to take for granted. But at the same time, I've had a few breakdowns thinking about two things. Number one, when will life ever feel normal again? I'm not saying that these are rational. I'm saying these are the things I've had breakdowns about. When will life ever be normal again? Like, when I think of, and like, this gets a little dark, but I'll just say it. Like, when I think of the peak experiences in my life, you know, things like being able to travel, mm-hmm. When will that ever happen again? Like, when will I, you know, get on a plane with my bike and go to Italy and just check out and, you know, go do that for a month? And what will be the long-term effect on all of our lives? I think specifically the lives of young people. You know, like my daughter and Eve's kids and all of their friends, who, to be honest, are missing out on things in life that will never be replaced. You know,
I know that's the part that's sad. Sorry, guys, you hear the emotion in my voice just because I knew I just anticipated what you were going to say, that it's irreplaceable. I mean, I guess their lives just won't be like ours, but that wasn't true for generations. I mean, and they're being robbed, and that's hard to deal with.
And to be honest, like, that's what gets me down, that I feel like I'm not someone who normally kind of lives vicariously through my child. But things like not having a high school graduation, you know, attending college over Zoom, or not going to college because they can't stand online school anymore, not being able at an age that they should be, you know, making new friends, dating, all of those things that all of us experienced at those ages that they can't do. Mm-hmm. And then for me, honestly, that leads to even more catastrophizing thoughts of, like, what if these COVID vaccines don't work as well as it seems like they're going to? What if there's another pandemic of a different
state? I do worry about that. I worry about the second one that is particular, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, in a way, I sort of hate to put that out there, but I just think if a lot of our listeners are feeling that way, I just want you to know, like, I have, like, the opposite of depressive tendencies in normal life. I think everything's fine when it's not. And that really, like, those are the things that really get me down, is thinking, what if we have another huge curveball, such as it turns out, you know, COVID vaccines only give you immunity for 4 months, or there's mm-hmm. another pandemic that is equally bad and, you know, comes on the heels of this one. So I think the silver lining of that is that it has forced me to work more on staying in the moment and sort of connecting with that feeling of, you know, in this moment, I'm fine. In this moment, I am okay. So I'm not much of a meditative person, and I have actually started meditating for that reason, because I found I was having a lot of trouble with those sort of spiraling, panicky thoughts, and very simple meditations have really helped me. And I think I've also, you know, as I've said from the start of the pandemic, really tried to give myself some time to be sad about the sad things. You know, to say that, as you were saying, Eve, like, for those of us alive right now, I feel that this is going to be probably the defining event of our lifetimes.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that at times, I mean, and this sounds weird, but I think you guys will know what I mean. Being on the verge of a panic attack or feeling really depressed is at times a sane response mm-hmm. to an insane situation.
Yeah.
That the thing that would be understandable would be, the thing that would be hard to understand is if you felt fine.
I want to say some thought that you made me think of, I've just thought of this over the time, is that I felt like I've lived my whole life and I thought I just think it was naive of our, not just my generation, but like all these generations. Like I never thought like we would have to go through, it's not a war, but I just felt like, oh, that was dumb of us to think that we would ever not have to have some big situation, you know, that we'd have to deal with. And now it's all in our face. So we do have to deal with it.
Yeah. And I think, you know, like this isn't a political statement, and we welcome listeners all over the political spectrum.
But
I think it's just a fact that in the US, we are pretty much on track for the COVID death toll to be at or higher than the total death toll from World War II. Before vaccines are rolled out on any sort of mass scale. Yeah. So I really think for those of us who are alive today, it is going to be the defining event of our lifetimes. But I also want to think that all of the cliches that we hear about this year are also true, even though you kind of want to strangle people when you're still hearing those cliches after 9 months. It is true also that I think it's made most of us more grateful for the simple things in life, that we have been forced to slow down and
cook
think
bread.
About yes, and make bread, exactly. You know, and think about what amount of craziness do we want to add back into our lives when the pandemic is over, you know?
A readjustment.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That we've sort of realigned. Like for me, I mean, I've started emailing, like old fashioned letter emailing with a couple of my high school friends, which clearly I could have done. Like I've only had an email account for 30 years. But taking the time to do that has really been nice. And then I guess the last thing I would mention is anyone who follows me on social media knows that my new total obsession during the pandemic is animal fostering.
Oh my gosh, they're so cute.
We fostered 21 cats and 3 dogs.
I do have to say, Corinne knows, my husband never had dogs growing up, and so we can't convince him. So I would have been, and every time I see him, I'm like, oh, I want that kitten that Corinne's fostering. I want to take it. But my husband will quash it. He's meany. No, he's not. But
so this is a now become like this huge part of our lives that we never would have had time for before the pandemic, because I think we traveled too much. Like we were away for my daughter's mountain bike races and skiing and everything. And now like hanging out at home with my little fur balls. It just
well, and I actually want to say, I appreciate so you sharing all about that, because for real, it gives like, what do you call the dopamine or something,
or
even
like
to those of us watching
or whatever.
It. Yeah, like watching it through social media, I'm like, oh, those guys are so cute, or you know, it just is a feel good thing. And then you talk to us about who adopted them and how their lives are improved, and it's just a positive thing. So thank you.
And I think too, you know, like I'm a really cheesy animal person, but one thing I will tell you is that a couple of people who have adopted our little fur balls, especially people who are single and live by themselves, have told me
it's
like there's no way I could have emotionally survived the lockdown without my animal, you know, or just, you know, one of our adopters said like having somebody to take care of was what got me out of bed on some days, thinking like, right, I can't just lay here. So yeah, my little fur balls.
Oh, sweet. I forgot one thing I wanted to add, just somehow when you were talking, I guess because I was saying that you were talking about that you share with us on Facebook about the foster animals, was that another thing for some of those of you who are on Facebook with me, my sons are really good piano players, and and so this kind of corny thing that I've been doing, like kind of shoving on all my friends, but they seem to like it.
I know what you're going to say, and I watch all of them on Facebook.
Is that I make my sons, well, especially for the holiday, not make them, but one of my sons, I'll tell you the story, then I'll say what somebody said, was that anyway, often I have them, we do it together where they do little mini concerts on Facebook Live. And I did that for them too, because I feel like I want them to have some kind of interaction with people, and they usually get positive feedback. And so they play piano. And right now during the holiday season, they're playing twice a week, and they'll play like a song together. They always play duets for everybody so far. And so anyway, that, and then, but it was funny that they really like it too, even though it was because they're teenagers, sometimes they look like they're having held hostage. Because I was going to say that one of our friends, that my son's friend, his mom, she texted him, and she's like, Axel, don't look like you're being a hostage video.
Right. Witness protection.
But no, they really like it. I was just thinking like, that's a weird way to share with people, but people seem to like it. And it's not super long. I don't say like we have a half hour concert. It's like, you know, 2 minutes or whatever.
Right. No, it's literally like 2 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's been something too. I think just somehow, I guess the point of that is for everybody else is you don't have to make your sons get on there as a hostage video, playing piano. But the idea of sharing, somehow sharing creative stuff with people too is something that makes you feel connected outside of our bubble, you know, outside of our confinement, feels connected with other people.
Yeah. So Eve, for our last sort of substantive question, fill us in on some of your goals for 2021, and just saying that number, that in 1 month it will no longer be 2020, makes me feel better. So what are you looking forward to?
I just want to say too about that was, okay, one of my what is it, sayings in life is always like, you know, it could be worse, like you said, like you never yeah. And I remember saying like 2019, we're all like, oh my god, this year was awful, it's gonna be way better in 2020, and like little did we know. So
know.
Yeah, so well, one thing I'm gonna do that I talked about earlier and kind of looping back to that is I'm targeting to truly release the second edition of my book Maintaining Your Second Language, and I'm really excited about it. I've been working on it a lot, and I just makes me happy to
I think you're going to do it.
Yeah I really do feel like this is the year it's going to happen, and I've been working on it a lot lately, and it's something I'm passionate about, and something that I like doing, and you know, I think, oh, there's this new idea or whatever. So, and the other thing that's related to that is I'm also hoping to release an audio version of it. So I had that idea, but then I thought, well, I don't want to do it for the current version because I'm going to do the second version, you know?
Right.
And then I thought, but yeah, would people really like it or not? You guys can let me know, listeners out there. But I've had several people tell me, like one person who's a very sweet person just mentioned it to me lately. It was like, have you ever thought of doing an audiobook? And I said, well, I had. He's like, it would be great. You know, so I've been getting some encouragement from that for you people, whether you want to buy it or not. Some people are encouraging me. And cool. So that's kind of a fun project. Once the second version is done, then I want to do an audio version of that. So, and then I also have a new diversification business goal that I'm working on that Corinne knows about. And I'm planning to launch that in 2021 as well. And I don't want to say too much about it now to the listeners, just because you guys will all hold me to it. You know?
Yeah, I think you're going to do that one too, though. I know what it is,
I do too. You're going to do it. But I just feel like I want to make a little more progress before I kind of announce it publicly. Uh-huh. But I'm really excited about this kind of, like we talk about, diversification business goal that I have. So
So
that's another thing for 2021. And then otherwise, just for, you know, directly translation and project management activities that I do professionally, I want to continue to expand my client base, you know, strategically, and just kind of continue having fun and enjoying what I do, and, you know, working with people that I like, that kind of, you know, like trying to control your own destiny instead of just, you know what I mean, like kind of working with people that make me feel happy and that I feel are positive additions to my business or whatever. So being proactive is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
And I want to repeat that thing I want to tell the pandemic it's not the boss of me.
Yep. Totally.
And I want to stay positive, you know, like we want to in this time, always looking forward. So no matter if we're continuing to be confined or not, you know, or if the world does or does not go back to normal, I want to, try to keep a positive mindset and do what I can with whatever confines we have. So what about you, Corinne?
Yeah, so hopefully pass my conference interpreting degree and think about what to do with it. Mm-hmm. So right now that's my main goal for sort of April through early June. And I'm hoping to actually go to Toronto for around a month if the pandemic allows to prepare for my final exams. I've been in the process of trying to get Swiss citizenship for about 2.5 years. My husband and my daughter already have it. So I'm hoping to get a decision on that and open up the possibility of either spending more time in Europe when that's possible, or perhaps pursuing some interpreting work there. I'd like to continue with international development translation and keep training for translators on its current trajectory. And this was sort of weird, but I thought of a goal for what I want to continue not doing.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Which is, I was very afraid that I would have a hard time detaching from ATA, the American Translators Association, after my term as president ended at this time last year, because I was on the ATA board for 7 years. Mm-hmm. So that was a big transition. But I really wanted to let the new ATA board do things their way. And I really appreciated that when David Rumsey's president term was over, he was the ATA president before me, that he was there if I needed him, but he never ever like inserted himself into anything. And I wanted to do that same thing for the new board, like be there if they need me, but never meddling if they don't. And I'm actually really happy because I feel like I have been able to do that, to the extent that sometimes, Eve, I have to ask you what's going on. But, you know, if I want an update on something within ATA, that sometimes I have to ask you because I don't know. And I think that's positive that I enjoy mm-hmm. being that much out of the loop, because it means I was able to, you know, turn to a new chapter.
Yeah. And I think too, just for you, like you put all the energy, anybody who does volunteer work, you put the energy in, and it's really positive to be able to see the fruit of your labor, but then, you know, recognize and move on and think, okay, it's yeah. next, not the next generation, but the next, you know,
right.
group.
Or iteration whatever. Or whatever. Yeah. yeah. So to close things out, Eve had this really great idea that we'd like to share with you guys, the framework that we use to assess 2020 and look ahead to 2021. So this is what we used for ourselves in the podcast, but we're going to give it to you in a concise way for your own purposes. So Eve, how about if you give us the summary and the four major points that we covered?
Yeah, and we can also post them on the show notes.
Put them in the show notes. Yep.
Yeah. So the first one that we did and that you can do is review your accomplishments for 2020. You know, celebrate yourself and also think about what did you do that contributed? What do you feel contributed to you achieving those goals? So you can kind of use that information moving forward to achieve more goals in the future. Mm-hmm. Number two is also review your disappointments and kind of as in a positive way, in that you can think about, you know, like people talk about, you know, when failure is not necessarily a bad thing, right? Like think about how you could use those failures to do better in those situations in the future. What can you learn from them? And number three is we talked about reflecting on what works for you to stay safe and sane, just in the bigger picture. And that's so important to, you know, all of our mental health and also just to being successful in general. And then number four is set out your goals for 2021. And I want to say be kind to yourself as you do so, and be kind as you look at those throughout the year. And if you need to kind of, you know, readjust them, or, you know, especially during this difficult time, we need to give ourselves a little extra love during this difficult time. And but the last one is then set out your goals for 2021. So I think, Corinne, that's about all the time we have for today. And thanks to all our listeners for joining us. And we do wish everybody a healthy and prosperous holiday season. And we'll talk to you in the new year.
Yeah. So thanks, everyone. And don't forget to subscribe to Speaking of Translation on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Stitcher. And the Spotify and Stitcher feeds are now working again.
Yay.
And I don't know why, but they are.
I know. Magic.
We'll take it. Yeah. If you enjoy the show, tell a friend or tell us at speakingoftranslation@gmail.com. Or Eve is on Twitter at ebodeux, B-O-D-E-U-X. And I'm at Corinne McKay. And we'll talk to you in a future episode.